Darya sustained Abahitaha with great attention. Gangam, the Ganges, Padaputa Jalam Hare, whose water is transcendentally pure because of emanating from the toes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. So translation and purport by His Divine Grace is confirmed Acharya Srila Abhacharya Vinda Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Maharaj ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Is there anyone here who refuses to say jai? We're glorifying Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. That's good. When King Bhagirath approached Lord Shiva and requested him to sustain the forceful waves of the Ganges, Lord Shiva accepted the proposal by saying, "Let it be so." Then with great attention, he sustained the Ganges on his head. For the water of the Ganges is purifying, having emanated from the toes of Lord Vishnu. Please respond to repeat. When King Bhagirath approached Lord Shiva and requested him to sustain the forceful waves of the Ganges, Lord Shiva accepted the proposal by saying, "Let it be so." Then with great attention, he sustained the Ganges on his head. For the water of the Ganges is purifying, having emanated from the toes of Lord Vishnu. So, there is no purport to this verse. So we go to the next verse, and the next verse also has no purport. And we'll go to the next one also has no purport. And we'll go to the next one has a purport. Verse 12 has a purport. The idea is that we want to, you know, imbibe Srila Prabhupada's culture in terms of the meaning of these statements. Because on our own, we may, you know, speculate about what Bhagirath means by "in this instance" or something like that. So Prabhupada gives his purpose so that he gives some insight about what these great personalities are discussing about this intentional dialogue of great personalities. So I go to the next verse, which is text 10. Bhagirata sarajashi niye bhuvana pavani yatra swap pitrinam deha basmi bhuta smaserati. Translation: the great and saintly King Bhagirath brought the Ganges, which can deliver all the fallen souls, to that place of earth where the bodies of his forefathers lay bound to ashes. Text 11. Radhena vayuvegena prayantam anu davati dishampunanti nidagdhan asinchat sagarap majan. Bhagirath, translation, Bhagirath mounted a swift chariot and drove before Mother Ganges, who followed him, purifying many countries until they reached the arches of Bhagirath's forefathers, the sons of Sagar. So I have just been told by Christopher Prabhu that I should treat 9, 10, and 11. So Bhagirath mounted a swift chariot and drove before Mother Ganges, who followed him, purifying many countries until they reached the ashes of Bhagirath's forefathers, the sons of Sagara, who were thus sprinkled with water from the Ganges. Om Gyana Timirandasya Gyana Jana Salakaya Saksu Melitam Jena Tismai Si Guru Venma Si Chaitanya Manobistan Sati Kham Jena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadama Yam Buddha Swapadam Kham Vancha Kalpatari Vyacha Kripa Sundhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanam Yo Vaishnava Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Si Mati Bhakti Vidanta Swami Tanam Namaste, Sarasati Deva, Gauravani Pacharini, Nirvisesa Sunya Bhavi Pachitari. So, we have very nice verses here, giving us basically historiographic verses. And this is very common in the study of religion. Like people, when they get to the PhD level, they may choose to do the history of religion. Or they may choose to do, their thesis may be based on the philosophy of religion or the sociology of religion. This text basically is giving us an idea about the history of religion, because it's all about historiography. And in these three verses, we are made to understand how Bhagirath, of course, in previous verses, we have a clue of the intentions of Bhagirath, what he did initially to be able to perform this very Herculean task of invoking the Ganges to the earthly planet. But what was his intention of invoking the Ganges? Everything we do has got some intention. So, here, we can understand from these verses that he had requested Lord Shiva to sustain the forceful waves of the Ganges. And of course, Lord Shiva, being a Maha Patita Pavana, being the best of all Vaishnavas, he didn't make any conditions. He performed the task unconditionally, out of joy and happiness, because he is very much favorably disposed to helping people in general. And sometimes people miscue and they tend to think that, you know, Lord Shiva is a personality that, you know, you could just approach for wishy-washy wishes or desires. But actually Lord Shiva, he is very much favorable to the devotees of Lord Vishnu. And therefore, Bhagirath, being Raja Rishi, he couldn't say no to Bhagirath. He couldn't say no to Bhagirath. And this is also one of the symptoms of a great personality. A great personality may even perform activities to inconvenience himself just to please the general mass of people. And we find that also in the case of Prabhupada. He left his comfort in Vrindavan and came all the way to the West, just for the sake of delivering conditioned souls. So here we find a distinct character. And this character of Bhagirata is something that, you know, fundamentally, that is what we are really embarking to be able to achieve. To be compassionate, to care for others, and not just working for ourselves, but working even just to be able to liberate our forefathers. In fact, that is the essence of this devotional service. We're not just after ourselves. We are striving hard. Even in the midst of so much of inconvenience, so much of incoherences, the devotee is working so hard to please Krishna. But if Krishna is pleased, then all of these other, you know, fulfillments are just, you know, part of the whole scheme. So Bhagirath here, he is striving to be able to deliver his forefathers. So he had all of these laid down plans, executed his plans, and now the Ganges is coming down. And there was some obstacle. Who has to sustain the Ganges? And then he worked out the modalities. He didn't just say, well, I've tried my best, and now there's another problem about who is going to sustain the Ganges. I'm just tired of all this stuff. He made arrangements. He worked out ways to be able to, you know, get that rectified. And he got Lord Shiva to do the job. When he approached Lord Shiva kindly agreed. And now, again, Lord Shiva, he demonstrates his magnanimity. What will Lord Shiva gain by that act? It's basically to be able to help to fulfill Bhagirata's desire of liberating his forefathers. The conditioned soul has a tendency to think, what am I going to gain from this? What is my benefit in this? You know, sometimes people ask us, so what is the benefit of being a Hare Krishna? You know, that was the asking, what's the benefit of actually worshipping God? But every one of us is obligated to some form of worship. Whether we like it or not, even the so-called atheists, they are embarking on some type of worship. Some people simply worship their bodies. But essentially, religion should be about purification. And this is exactly what the Raja Rishis have set as examples for us to be able to emulate. Each time we encounter even any difficulties in our devotional culture, in our devotional life, we should not think it is something strange. Difficulties in every endeavor is something normal. And we should figure out ways on how to deal with the difficulty. Bhagirath, even here, had a difficulty in terms of, now the Ganges has to come down, and then someone has to sustain the Ganges. So he went out sourcing for someone, some dependable person to be able to help to do the job. And here he met Lord Shiva, solicited for assistance. Lord Shiva agreed, and Lord Shiva, he did the job. He sustained the Ganges. So generally, you know, we have this historiography of the histories that have to do, or the narrations or whatever. But it's like having a theoretical concept or a theoretical framework. And based on that theoretical framework, you have to build the depth. And even beyond building the depth, you have to be able to build on the application. How that is related to everyday realities. Otherwise, if there is no application of the philosophical concepts, then it becomes like a ritual. It becomes like something that you can just do it for the sake of doing it, but there's no practical application. And this is one reason why, you know, scholars, they tend to debunk religion, because, you know, some people just repeat. I found that also traditional in Christianity. You know, people go to preach and they just, you know, they said, Jesus said this. Just to repeat something is good. But beyond even repeating, we have to think about what the acharyas, what is the commentary of the acharyas on this point. That's why we needed personalities in our own line of disciplic succession who have made commentaries on the Vedic literature. Now, if you read the Vedic literature, commentaries of impersonalists, then they give you a different perspective of whatever the speakers are saying in these great books. And that is why we have, you know, different settings, different groups, the impersonalist and the personalist, because their own conception is different. But with Vaishnava Vedanta, it is just straightforward. And so here we can understand a lot of things that primarily we are giving some idea that the Ganges is actually emanating from the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. So something emanating, water emanating from lotus feet of Vishnu, what are you thinking about? It could be so purifying, and that is exactly what is being mentioned here. This Ganges is so purifying. And the important factor here is sometimes people even go to India and they're too busy, they don't go to take a shower, a bath in the Ganges. And anyone who is traveling, especially to India, should make it as a point of duty to try to take a dip in the Ganga, because it's highly purifying. And of course, you know, I remember last time we were in Mayapur, and you know, there are some prayers also you have to say to Mother Ganga and all this, so much of details. But essentially people should take a dip in the Ganga, because the water of the Ganges is emanating from the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. That is clearly spelled out here, without any mixing words. And also we know what really transpired to that effect. How Vamana, just by his three steps, could actually took over the whole universe. And you know, we're basically what happens eventually. So the point in these three verses is giving us some illumination about the potency of the Ganga, and also how Bhagirath, the efforts of Bhagirath in trying to bring that in Ganga, and following the Ganga step by step, until the whole project was executed, cleansing, liberating his forefathers. Now one may raise an objection that, well, I don't just want liberation. But we do want liberation. Why not? If we don't want liberation, why are we even embarking in devotional service? But the liberation is different. In fact, if we don't have a motivation, we will not do anything. The point is that the motivation should be a pure motivation. For instance, if we don't want to serve, we don't want to serve Krishna, we will serve anyway. But we'll serve as illusory energy. And so, it's a positive choice. And therefore, we find an example of King Bhagirath being a Raja Rishi, that he did something for the benefit of a whole lineage of family relations. He worked so hard to liberate his forefathers. Now, we are also working hard, although we're not just setting our goal that, okay, we want to liberate our forefathers. But if we become pure devotees, then our great forefathers, grandfathers, forefathers, they become liberated. That's what Prabhupada said in the Krishna book. Like, I think like 10 generations before the individual and after the devotee. Like 20 generations. Now Bhagirath worked so hard for just his forefathers. But for someone who becomes a perfected soul in Krishna consciousness, it's not just only forefathers. People who are yet to be born would benefit from that savor. And so we have every cause, we have every reason to invest our energy in serving Prabhupada, to invest our energy in serving Sisi Radha Simasunda, to invest our energy in serving Sisi Krishna Balaram, and of course, to invest our energy in serving Sisi Gauranitai. But we have to be weary about the idea that, well, we know this is what we have to do and this is the benefit, and therefore we just have to go ahead to do that and minimize every other situation. No, it shouldn't be like that. For instance, Lord Krishna mentioned to Arjuna in the Padma Purana that those who claim to be worshipping me, they are not my devotees. But those who worship my devotees, they are my real favorable servants. So again, the concept of having to serve each other becomes very, very imperative in our lives. Everything is very scientific. No, we are talking about service, Vaishnava, seva, whatever. But I mean, this is basically what Krishna has set up in place. And so what Bhagirath has done to be able to give a shy of relief to his forefathers, a devotee who becomes perfected actually goes far beyond that. Not just one generation, but 10 generations. Before you and after you, like 20 generations, they become liberated. And so that's a reason for us to take the Krishna consciousness a practice seriously, because the benefit is great. And for whatever great benefit we have that has to accrue to us, we should know that this is the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. Because thousands of millions of people out there, they don't have the chance to be able to participate in this Krishna consciousness. So we should see it as a real blessing, an exceptional mercy from Srila Prabhupada, that we have been endowed with this potentials to be able to serve the Lord, and not only liberate ourselves, but liberate like 20 generations. And so this is a good reason for us to be serious in Krishna consciousness. Very good reason. Alright, so important point here is that Bhagirath, he did this, why? Because he was a great soul, he was a great devotee, Raja Rishi. If someone is not, you know, a Mahatma, is not great-minded, he won't work for the welfare of other people. No, he won't work for the welfare of other people. So we should follow the example. In fact, Bhagirath's example is very good for us, that we should work so hard to be able to become perfected souls. And it's not that someone else's perfected soul and somebody else couldn't. No, it's an open book of wisdom. Anybody could actually become a perfected soul. Whether you're in a female body or in a male body, anyone can actually become a perfected soul and liberate, you know, so many generations from his or her family. So we should take this to heart. Maybe there are some comments, some questions at this point. Sister, welcome.
Do they become devotees of Krishna, or do they just get sort of an impersonal liberation?
The liberation is of a different categorization, because what I've seen in Prabhupada's writing, he didn't really give. I've not seen the details so far in any of his writings, but I do know that he mentioned, I think in the Krishna book, one of his comments, that, you know, when one becomes a perfected soul, a pure devotee, like 10 generations before you and after you become liberated. The details I'm yet to read anywhere in his writings or any of the commentaries of our present writers. I've not seen it. Any comments or some questions? Madhujis? All right, in the absence of any comments, okay. Yeah.
Haribol Maharaj. So 10 generations in the past, 10 in the future, and the present. So it's 21 generations.
Right. that's a big boon.
Yeah. So these people that Bhagirath would liberate, they're actually going to the heavenly planets.
Uh-huh.
So it seems that's the concept of their liberation. But with the devotees like us, like you said, really, it's difficult to understand whether they go back to the spiritual world or they go to the heavenly planet. So my question is: sometimes we criticize the Christians that they sin and confess, and then they sin again. So people go take bath in the Ganges, wash off some sin, and go sin again. So it's like a dilemma there, really. I mean, can you shed some light into that?
Yeah. You know, we go, at least in the West,
we go to India once in a year, except for those who are really on money that, you know, they just go to India like they're going to New York. So the idea is that when one bathes in the Ganga, he sheds or she sheds the sinful deeds there, the reactions there. But then the pure devotee goes to bathe there and he absorbs it, you know, absorbs the sinful reactions. Now, in our system, it is not allowed. In fact, for someone who has taken initiation, he's not supposed to, or she's not supposed to, go into sinful activities again after taking initiation. It's like, you know, using a gun on your spiritual master. So, that precludes the devotee from, you know, that mentality of, you know, going to confess on Sunday or Friday or whatever, and then you go back to sin, just sin for 6 days or something like that, and then you confess for one day, and then you go back to sinful activities, then you go back. So, Prabhupada says this is mad. He made a comment in Upadisamrita that, you know, this type of mentality is like an elephant who goes to take a nice shower, and he comes to the land, and then, you know, immediately he comes to the land, he just rolls on the dust again, and, you know, smears itself with so much of dust. So that is not encouraged in our movement, because we are supposed to be cultivating sinful life, and we have the tools. Now, there is one silly mistake that people tend to think. Take for instance, if someone has been given a prescription, the person has a problem, health problem, he's given a medication. So the prescription is there. He takes the prescription. Now, there is one general tendency for people who are ill. When the ailment is acute, you know, they are meditating on the medication. What is the time? So that I take the medicine. As soon as they get some relief, okay, they tend to forget about, you know, complaining the dose of the medicine. This is a general thing. I mean, people have experienced this. That is why in the hospitals, the nurses and the doctors, they go around asking the patients, have you taken a medication this morning? And sometimes even they go personally to give the medication because tendency is to forget, because they're getting relieved a little bit. So we also have this tendency that, you know, I'm a devotee, so I don't really need to chant every day. But that is the immunity. If we don't chant, if we don't cultivate daily sadhana, we will become victims of those very things we preached against, those very things we don't like. And therefore, the only shield is to be able to embark on, you know, some serious sadhana. Especially chanting, we should not neglect the chanting, because it has a lot of potency, and that's the driving force that keeps on the move, that keeps us on the move. And that is also what helps to prevent us being run down by temptations. Temptations is a big thing. Lots and lots of studies have been done on temptations. And people, even scholars, they've seen how people have become victims of temptations. People make laws, they preach particular concepts and theories or whatever, and they become victims of those same things that, you know, they were completely opposed to. Because, and you know why we can't blame them? Because they don't have any immune system. There's no purification. So just having high concepts or high ideals is not going to solve the problem. What Prabhupada has done to us is that he left a legacy behind, a sustainable legacy behind, that could help to sustain our purity. And that is by chanting every day. And if you think the chanting is not doing anything to you, all right, stop the chanting for some time and you see what goes on in your mind. So, Prabhupada has given us everything. We just have to utilize it. And if we are doing this, we will not become victims of the mind and the senses. So we are highly protected, fully protected. Okay? We should just follow what we have been given, and we have no fears of, you know, going to confess on Sunday again and then go back to sin. Thank you very much for raising that.
Any other comments? Yes.
I'm wondering, you mentioned something about how it's not wrong to be performing devotional service with the motive of some sort of liberation, of one of the five different types of liberation, but it explains in so many of Prabhupada's books, and you hear devotees always saying that you shouldn't be performing devotional service with ulterior motives, and that pure devotional service means that you don't even want any type of liberation, you just want to serve Krishna.
Right.
So was your point that maybe in the beginning it's okay to have that motive, and then later on we need to clear that out, or like, what's the point that you're trying to make, because it seems a little bit contradictory?
Yeah, so that's a nice point you raised. The point I'm trying to make is that we have different desires before coming to Krishna consciousness, and like you rightly mentioned, when we come to Krishna consciousness, in fact, I remember when we just joined the movement and we go out for preaching, when people, I remember when we go out, you know, people see us like, you know, big spiritually, so they come with different problems here and there. And I used to be very angry when people come to tell me, oh, my girlfriend left me, or my boyfriend left me, can you help me too? I used to be very angry, okay? But later I realized that, oh, these are potential devotees, we should embrace them, you know, trick them to be able to come closer to Krishna. So initially, people have, you know, intense desire, material desire, but just like Lord Krishna clearly mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that, you know, whether you have multiplicity of desires, whether you don't have any desire, akama, sabra, kama, va, moksha, kama, that, I mean, whatever your status is, he said, come to me. I'm your father, just come to me. Now, when we come, then we have some higher understanding that, you know, there is the principle of anya belasita sunyam jnana kama anavrita. Okay? So initially we should not discourage people, we should not just damn people that, oh, come on, you're full of material desires. you're not the good candidate. So that's a good point you raised. Yeah, when we are in devotional service, I mean, like in the beginning, Prabhupada mentioned, no, eat, take prasad, take. But then at some point in time, you know, we come to the level that, you know, we want to check ourselves from eating too much, because we know that even the prasadam, when we eat too much, we simply go to sleep. And then the whole day's activities is jeopardized. So the general principle is there, but we have to also understand the specific needs of the body, and therefore we adopt a particular system that will actually favor our devotional upliftment. So your point is very good. Yes, when we come close, we should be able to come to embrace the Anya Belasita Sunyam concept. So that's a good point. Right. All right. You have some questions? I'm looking at the time. Once it's 8:45, I'm going to close. All right.
Yes, Maharaj. When you were talking about chanting, and mm-hmm. chanting purifies, so how important is it, all right, after, you know, we're chanting, mm-hmm. and then we're busy doing a lot of things, and then we go and take vegetarian food cooked by non-devotees.
Yeah, that is a big thing, especially in the Western countries, because even the people who profess to be vegetarians, they don't understand that even just by being a vegetarian, Lord Krishna mentions in the Gita that any food that is not offered to me, if you eat any food that is not offered to me, you're simply eating, you know, sin. It's not me saying, that's what Lord Krishna said in the Gita. So we have to ask ourselves, is this food offered to Krishna? If it's not offered to Krishna, we should know. If it means it's a vegetarian diet, that we are actually going to get some reactions. And in fact, grains, it's even dangerous for devotees to take grains outside. And the best thing is for devotees to cook for themselves. Why eat outside? If someone is going to work, the wife should prepare his lunch for him. Why eat outside? It's dangerous. The person who cooks the food, the mentality of the person goes into the food. The food is not even offered to Krishna outside there. It may say, well, I just chant Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu. But that's not a mantra for offering bhoga to Krishna. It's good you're remembering Vishnu, but we are sadhakas. We have to follow proper procedural devotional methodologies. Then that will help to speed up our devotional progress. If we go outside and pick some biscuit and eat because it's a vegetarian biscuit, we are also eating some sinful reactions. And it will weaken our mind. If we go outside and pick some bread, it's grain. It's grain. I remember I was in an airplane. One time I was traveling to India. And then, you know, these air mistresses, they came bugging me about their food. So I said, I'm not eating. And then one of them was so bitter. She came to me and yelling, why are you not eating our food? What do we do to you? I said, I don't eat outside. I'm a priest. I don't eat outside. He said, no. We have vegetarian foods also. If you're vegetarian, we'll give vegetarian food. Why don't, you know? She was so upset, you know. But I know it's a natural thing for mothers that, you know, someone comes to your house, you find him, or your child, maybe you upset your child, and then the child, you say, oh, Govinda, come and eat. He said, oh, mommy, I'm not hungry. If something is wrong. When the child says, I'm not eating, women, they taste that like anything. You know, so, I mean, I understood her situation, so I just tried to placate her with sweet words. But, you know, they don't understand why someone will not eat outside. Food great. Fruit is okay. Fruit is different. Fruit you can, you know, just mentally offer to a spiritual master, and then you eat it, or say, chant Hare Krishna. But grains, I will advise devotees to abstain from eating grains outside. Because, you see, I was born in Africa, and I know within the African culture, if you tell your mother that I'm not eating, that is more than a cane. That's more than whipping your mother with a cane. It's more than whipping your mother with a cane. And I know, I never did that. Only once I did it to my grandmom. And my father we went into 100 meters race. He came after me. I was sitting on one side of the sitting room. When I saw him coming, my grandmama already told him that, you know, your boy refused to eat. So I saw him coming on, like on this side, and I was sitting on this side, and so immediately he was entering the sitting room. So I went out to this side. Then he just came after me, straight. So like 100 meters. So parents don't like that, and you know why? Because when the mother cooks for the family, her mentality goes into the food. She's meditating on the whole of the family, meditating on the husband, meditating on the children. Those who eat the food, they, you know, there is that type of cohesion in the family. Now, the case is different when the dad gives money to everybody to go and eat in the burger shop. That means, you know, there is no real cohesion in the family. And this is one reason why you find in India the divorce rate is less. This is one reason, the food. Because I know, even up to now, in India, if husbands are going to work, the wife will, you know, set up his lunch. They hardly eat outside, even outside of India. I know in the case, like in Africa, when I was in Africa, I know, and I had a friend with a number of Indians, and each time they don't eat outside. The wives will always pack their lunch for them from home. Because otherwise, why is the mother angry that the child refuses to eat? Or if you have a wife, tell the wife, I'm not eating. Oh, you finished cooking? Oh, very good. But I'm not hungry. Don't even say I'm not eating. Just say I'm not hungry.
and see her reaction, and see her reaction, whether she will say, oh, wonderful, you're not hungry, that's very good. There's a reason for whatever we are doing. We say, take all the Krishna prasad. Why? For purification. And Krishna said, if you eat anything that is not offered to me, you're eating sin. And sin brings good reaction or bad reaction. So we have to be careful about. You see, sometimes it's difficult to control the tongue when you go out. But even when we are hungry, we should as much as possible avoid grains. I was raising these things in one temple I went to in Africa, and two little boys, they were going to school, the school boys, small boys. And so, after the class, so their mother came to me that, you know, these boys, they said that I had to prepare food for them, that they're not going to eat biscuit anymore. I said, oh, they were in the class. So they just heard and I told their mother, no biscuit. Cook for us or we are not eating. Yeah. It's a simple idea. And if you are doubting this, all right, stop eating the prasad. I'm just eating bread and biscuit outside every day. Or you go to the vegetarian restaurant and eat from the vegetarian restaurant. Do this for like 1 or 2 months and you see your consciousness. What happens? Duryodhana, you know the case of Bhishma, when he was giving up the body, he was on a bed of arrows, was speaking all of this philosophy and organizational leadership. And someone challenged him, what were you doing? You are talking all these big, big things. What were you doing in the hall where Draupadi was being derobed? What were you doing? You had all this type of high ideals. What did you do? You're talking about organizational leadership. What did you do? So Bhishma, he revealed that, you know, I was contaminated by Duryodhana's food. He revealed it. Really, Mahabharata is there. Anything we are doing has got some scientific underpinnings. It's not just some, you know, religious dogma and impositions on people and all these rules and regulations. No, it's not just like that. I mean, just like, again, this other point is there. We have to come to the temple or we have to live in the holy dam. But these are all things that social scientists have experimented and they have formulated theories on all this in that environment where you operate impacts on you. So, when we are speaking something and we don't also have the other side of it, then we tend to think that it is okay, it's a religious principle. But it's not only a religious principle. It is a proven scientific information, proven scientific concepts. So Prabhupada has given us everything. We should just embrace it. And if we don't know the details, we can investigate and we'll find that they are all scientific values. Hare Krishna, Hare Ram. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.